new drivers don't dare to turn right, especially if it's three lanes here and three lanes there. They will say, hey, it's easy to turn left, go with the traffic, and then find something, U-turn. So, let's say you're a new driver, and you come to this junction. We don't have that many right turn junctions of six lanes. But back home, when I was learning my driving in Penang, the teacher always his favorite take me to one of the busiest road in Penang. Three lanes coming here, three lanes going there. And in Australia and in Malaysia, we drive on the left side. So you come and you got to turn right, which means you got to watch for these three lanes and watch for the other lanes there. And you got six lanes to watch. And that was the one little road that I never quite liked. I always like, you know, I enjoy the parking on the U-turn and all this. And when it comes to that, and sometimes I had to wait almost 10 minutes. It was such a busy road. And always the teacher would say, be patient, wait, wait, wait. And you and I know that most experienced drivers can get it through in less than 1 minute. But you're the learner. You're extra, extra, extra careful. So you go, I'm not sure whether I can make it at this speed. Look, I'm not sure that car is that fast. But in the end, when you've done it a few times, it's easy. So you get used to it. And most good drivers wouldn't probably be waiting 10 minutes at the junction. You probably find a gap within a minute. Speedy Gonzalez, of course, would find it within half a second. But the experience of it is different. And what we are saying is, every expansion God does in your life will require a revelation. So our question is, what is a revelation? A revelation is, number one, knowledge. It has to come to you in knowledge first. It can be a doctrinal knowledge or knowledge of something, the correct knowledge. Then it has to be an experience. You experience it. And finally, it becomes a reality to you. Many of us now, if you're driving for many years, you don't think when you drive that much. You're on automatic function. And you get so used to it, sometimes you're on a road, and before you know it, you're already where you want to be. You know, all your looking left, right, being careful, all those things are automatic now. And sometimes you may even find yourself going a road that you say, hey, why am I on this road? I'm supposed to go on there. Because by habit, you're so used to traveling on that road. You're going in order. So when we drive, especially if you're driving a car where you got to shift the gear and press a clutch at the same time, you know, you cannot be thinking, is this first gear? Is this second here? At the back way, bah, 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 bah. Come on, make up your mind which gear you want to be. Right. No, it's all automatic. And sometimes if you're driving a manual car, you're changing, and you realize, hey, when did I change that? It was automatic. And you realize, hey, I'm already on fourth gear. I thought I was not on fourth gear. Because it goes deeper into you. So revelation covers three things. Knowledge, experience, and the third I call reality. Reality means it becomes second nature to you. Second nature to you. And for example, now, why do you close your eyes? Did you tell your eyes as you're coming, something coming to you, say, eyes closed. No, you close your eyes automatically because it's second nature to you. It's a second reaction. All revelation has to have those three components, and revelation is very important. It is a foundation of the church. Everything that you expand into needs revelation. And revelation has three things. What are the three things? Number one? Okay. Give it to me again. Number one?
Knowledge.
Okay. Number two?
Revelation.
Experience. Thank you. Experience. Okay. Number three, reality. Okay. Remember, reality is like it's become intuition to you. Second nature. So once again, number one, number two, number three, reality. So revelation is those areas. And so let me give a few Bible scriptures here. In the book of Ephesians, and Paul tells us in Ephesians chapter 2 verse 20, it says, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. Now, if you look carefully, the foundation of the church is not Jesus Christ. The foundation is the apostles and prophets. Hey, look at your Bible, verse 20. But Jesus is the chief cornerstone. So in a sense, he is part of the foundation. Yes, he is. But many people don't realize that the apostles and prophets are part of the foundation. In other words, a true apostle and a true prophet brings forth to the church in their generation the things that will found and solidify the church. So any church that is not built by apostolic or prophetic ministries will be wishy-washy. It will go, you know, be moved by every whim and fancy. In every generation, God will raise apostles and prophets to be part of the foundation of the true church. Question, why were they the foundation? It's not because of who they are or what they are. No, it's because of chapter 3, they carry with them the revelation. In verse 5, chapter 3 verse 5, which in other ages was not made known to the sons of men, as it has now been revealed by the Spirit to his holy apostles and prophets. So the reason they are part of the foundation is because they have the revelation. They have the revelation for their generation. And if you follow the true prophets and apostles in their generation, remember they are also false ones, you will be part of the true church. And so revelation is important. It tells us they carry the revelation in their time. And then we look over at Matthew chapter 16, a very familiar passage to many of us, Matthew 16, where Jesus talked about the foundation of the church in Acts. Matthew 16. Matthew chapter 16. It says here, in Matthew 16, Jesus says to Peter in verse 18, Matthew 16, 18, and I will say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. So it says, on this rock I will build my church. That is Matthew 16, verse 18. Now, there's a whole debate of what the rock is. If you read that passage in the Greek word for Peter is Petros. Petros. And Petros is a masculine noun. In the Greek, like in many other languages, every object is either male or female. It has a gender. Right? Very few objects do have a neutral gender. But every object has a male or feminine gender. In English, we have that to a certain extent. Like we usually call a country she, right? We seldom call it it. And many times we call objects feminine in English, like a ship. And say, she was sailing through the waters. So you can call the ship a she. So in English, we also give gender to objects. But in other languages like Greek, every object carries its own gender. So Petros, anything that ends in O-S, Petros, is a masculine gender. Masculine gender. And there is a feminine gender for rock, which is the word Petra. T-R-A. Petra. Which is actually feminine for rock. So in the Greek, when you read it in the Greek, it says, you are Petros. Upon this Petra, I will build my church. You will never see Jesus referring to Peter. Rock does not equal Peter. Because one is masculine, one is feminine. So, in this passage in Matthew 16, 18, you got three interpretations. The Catholic Church interpret the rock as Peter. Therefore, the Pope is the foundation of the entire church. History has proven that popes has also led the church astray. Start wrong doctrines like purgatory and indulgences and all kinds of wrong things. So we do not believe in the infallibility of the Pope. That means, you know, everything he says needs to be checked with the Bible. So the rock cannot, does not equal Peter. It's not referring to Peter. And then, second interpretation of Matthew 16:18. The rock referred to Jesus. He is a foundation. That is a very nice interpretation. It's solid. It can be cross-reference to other places where Jesus is a rock of my salvation. He is our rock and everything else. And that's very nice. But Jesus is also masculine. Now, church is feminine. Ecclesia is feminine. The second interpretation is acceptable in a general sense. It's okay doctrinally to refer to Jesus as our rock and our foundation stone. It's okay. But in the context of Matthew 16:18, where does it refer to Jesus in the entire section? In the context, it is not there. Huh. So, let me remove this. Where in Matthew 16 does it refer to Jesus as a foundation? Within that, just that passage, in a context, it does not. In a general sense, you can say that. Nothing wrong with that. Jesus is a rock. So here's the question. Let's do a little bit of Sherlock Holmes. If Jesus says in Matthew 16, verse 18, he says, this is the old King James here. He says, thou art Petros, and upon this Petra, T-H-I-S, this Petra, this is feminine, rock is feminine. When you refer to this, it's singular this, not these, singular this. He must be referring to something he just said in a few chapters earlier. Like, for example, if I tell Louis, can I offer you this? Would you accept this? And Louis looks at me and says, what this are you referring to? Right? Who knows, I could be offering him something he doesn't like a durian. Okay. So he doesn't know it. He wouldn't accept it or I could be offering to Vince and says, you know, would you accept this? You'd rather have a pizza, right? He's Italian, right? And he will want to find out what this is. If the this referred to pizza, he will accept it. But if the this referred to a 15-year-old cat about to die in 3 months, See, he does not want to accept the 15-year-old cat about to die.